Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, July 16th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Teresa Mitchell in for Liam Delta.
The state's leading water protection groups send you a heads up over the Department of Ecology's plans to weaken industrial stormwater protections.
Longtime Northern California activist Mary Moore has an update on this year's Bohemian Grove oligarch extravaganza.
And Representative Earl Blumenauer has a good idea, a water trust fund. If we can find it, we can fund it. It's an idea anyway.
Today is shaping up to be sunny, slightly roasty with a high near 88, and not much of a breeze to take the edge off. Tonight, clear with lows around 60. Tomorrow will be even hotter with temperatures in the 90s and lows at night in the 60s. Deo gracias.
And first we go to news from around Cascadia. Every year at this time, plutocracy takes a holiday. The wealthiest, most powerful people, make that men in the world, gather in the redwood forests of Northern California to frolic. It's 2 weeks of homoerotic hijinks, hookers, and heavy drinking. Think Davos on ecstasy with no underpants. And every year, an intrepid band of protesters gather to greet the oligarchs at Bohemian Grove. My guest this morning, Mary Moore, has been among those demonstrators for nearly 30 years now. Good morning, Mary. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, good morning. I'm glad to be here.
First off, some of our listeners perhaps don't know what Bohemian Grove is, what the Bohemian Club actually does. Could you bring us up to speed on that?
Sure. The Bohemian Club started in the 1870s, so it's well over 100 years old. It's headquartered in San Francisco. And the Bohemian Grove is the encampment up in Sonoma County where I live that is kind of the playground for the Bohemian Club. The Bohemian Club is an all-male, extremely exclusive, probably the most exclusive and longest-lasting in the world, group of the military, government, corporate, and banking industries, the cream of the cream. In other words, for the government, you wouldn't necessarily have your House members or your senators, although they have been guests up there, but every Republican president since Coolidge has been a member of the Grove. So it is the top elite of the Fortune 500 and the other things that I mentioned.
And so what actually goes on for these 2 weeks when the Bohemian Grove episode is taking place? I understand that the culmination of the whole thing is an event called the Cremation of Care.
No, actually, the Cremation of Care is the first event. That happened last Saturday. They started coming in on Friday, and the first Saturday of the two-week encampment is always the Cremation of Care, which is a very bizarre ceremony where the men wear red hooded robes and they throw the cares of the world away so they can recreate for 2 weeks. I have long given up trying to interpret that to the public, let everybody like a big giant ink blot, you know. But the purpose of that is simply to let their hair down. They drink a lot of drinking, as you indicated in your opening. There is a heavy use of prostitutes who are not allowed in. The men go out for that. But the main thing that we have focused on over the years are their daily lakeside talks. I personally do not care if they're frolicking around in tutus and having gay sex and peeing on redwoods and all the other things that seem to fascinate people. My concern is with these lakeside talks because there are two given daily, and these are real public policy talks without public scrutiny.
This is really where the global policy is hammered out.
Whether it's hammered out or not is not up to me to say because I'm not up there watching. But the content of it is what scares me. And I know this is a short interview, so I would put out right now that you can go to SonomaCountyFreePress.com and look for the 25 years of highlights of the Lakeside Talks. But just some examples, I mean, back in the 80s, we had Edward Teller up there speaking on who was father of the H-bombs, I'm sure your listeners know, whose topic was nuclear energy. And in 1980, that was a very hot topic in California with Diablo Canyon and all. We had World Bank and International Monetary Systems that year. I mean, we've had space war, fact versus fantasy. We've had Caspar Weinberger on the topic of rearming America at the time that he was the defense secretary for Reagan. We had Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia later on speaking on the church, state, and the Constitution. So these are obvious things that involve you and me, and we have no access to these what amount to public policy talks.
There is no media at all. No one from the outside is allowed in. Just in closing then, Mary, could you give listeners that website again where they could find out more about some of these daily talks?
Please do. www.sonoma, S-O-N-O-M-A, countyfreepress.com.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Mary Moore, one of the Bohemian Grove protesters and all-round, year-round activist. Thanks so much for that, Mary.
You're quite welcome.
This from Paying the Piper Department. If you don't want to pay the price, don't pollute in the first place. Oregon environmental regulators intend to adopt new federal air quality rules that could force small businesses to get contaminant discharge permits costing from $120 to $720 a year. Small businesses that could need permits for the first time include auto body shops, dry cleaners, and metal and plastic plating shops. Paint stripping and surface coating operations, mostly auto body shops, could be affected if they use paint that includes toxic metals. And dry cleaners still using perchloroethylene, say that three times quickly, perchloroethylene, would also have to have the permits. But why are we even issuing permits for the use of chemicals we know are killing us?
That's the thing. What is this permit business? We should be banning this stuff, all the time and money and legislation and hot air blown out over something it shouldn't. We shouldn't even be considering. The Earth is a closed system, right? Land, air, and water. That's what we've got. And we're rapidly depleting our limited supplies of potable water. Representative Earl Blumenauer has proposed that the nation set aside $10 billion annually in an effort to address the problem. Yesterday, Blumenauer introduced a bill, the Water Protection and Reinvestment Act, to fund repairs for drinking water and sewage systems. It may seem like too little and too late, but whatever we do right now to preserve what's left of our dwindling water supplies, it's definitely worth the trouble.
We are worried about bees, and we should be. They are dying off at alarming rates. The solution is simple. Stop spraying agricultural chemicals. But as is the case in so many situations, from global warming to the global water crisis, the first best solution is the last to be considered. Yesterday at the Xerces Society based in Portland, announced it has received nearly $500,000 from the Natural Resources Conservation Service to do some of the work. All of this business involves remediation. None of it goes toward abatement. Stop the chemicals, problem solved.
See, $500, that's not very much money, really, in the greater scheme of things. And when you consider that the simple solution is don't spray that stuff. If we really cared about bees and not so much about publicity, the simple solution is don't do it in the first place.
That's terrorist talk.
Teresa, why do you hate America? Look out, Cascadia. Here comes the national energy stampede. I'm not kidding. This is bad news. We may soon find ourselves underwriting air conditioning for people who move to Phoenix, Arizona without thinking about the heat issue. Government and energy experts say that the Pacific Northwest is a region rich in energy resources with the potential to provide the United States, hold your breath here, the United States and Canada with a significant portion of their energy needs. Oh, really? Is that what we're going to be doing? And here's the really disturbing aspect of these federal cogitations. These experts are concentrating on finding the right, this is virtually a quote, a paraphrase, actually, the right balance between fossil fuels and nuclear power and the greener technologies such as biofuels, wind power, and geothermal. All this is very, very scary stuff. So we're basically, we're going to be the janitor next to the furnace for the entire enterprise of North America. Think about it.
Democrats have learned from the GOP box of tricks that the only way to get social justice laws passed is to nail those laws to the military. In this case, in order to pass a hate crimes law, the legislation has been tacked onto the defense spending bill. And meanwhile, back in Oregon, five women have filed suit against Oregon and the Department of Corrections. They are charging former Coffee Creek Correctional Facility employees of sexual assault, battery, and harassment. America, a beacon of light in a world of depravity.
Isn't it amazing that in order to get a hate crime, this is against particularly women and gays, that in order to pass the legislation, we have to tack it on to a military spending bill, because we know that for damn sure they're not gonna turn that down.
We're talking about the important stuff here.
Yeah. Here's some more important stuff. There's regular homegrown pollution, and then there's industrial strength stormwater pollution. Incredibly, Oregon's Department of Ecology plans to weaken constraints on this leading cause of water contamination statewide. How'd that happen? Brett Vandenhoevel, director of Columbia Riverkeeper, is my guest today. Riverkeeper and a consortium of leading water protection groups are opposing the plan. Brett, good morning. Thank you so much for being with us today. Can you talk a little bit about this? I find it just astonishing that we have a department, the Department of Ecology, which is considering weakening protections. What's going on here?
Yeah, there's a draft permit from the Washington Department of Ecology related to their stormwater discharge that allows, as you know, the stormwater is a major source of pollution for rivers and streams, and they're actually going to allow more pollutants to be discharged instead of trying to make it better. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality's permit is not much better. These are permits that allow, you know, that allow the industries to discharge toxic pollutants into the rivers.
So, has there been any public input? Do we have any say in the matter? How would we address this situation?
Well, right now in Washington, you know, for the people who are listening in Vancouver and all along the Columbia, where discharging, you know, all of that certainly affects the Columbia. I'm in Longview right now that has huge stormwater discharges. There's a public comment period out. The Department of Ecology's website for the state of Washington allows people to comment. Columbia Riverkeeper and a consortium of other groups have submitted detailed comments, basically saying it's outrageous to allow more pollution to make the permit weaker at a time when it should be coming more stringent, when we recognize the effect of stormwater. It has PCBs, it has mercury, it has aluminum and zinc and lead and all of these toxic pollutants. The more and more scientists are looking at them, that there's huge impacts on fish and humans, but at the same time, we're giving industries a break by making them or allowing them not to treat this, just to discharge it completely untreated.
Brett, briefly, just in wrapping up here, how do we reconcile this with Representative Earl Blumenauer's proposal for a $10 billion a year water trust fund? On the one hand, we are basically giving free rein to industry to pollute all they want, and on the other hand, we're going to spend $10 billion a year in abatement.
Right. I mean, by far the least expensive way to protect, drinking water or to preserve salmon is to pollution in the first place instead of trying to clean it up years later. I mean, we've realized that lesson.
Lot of money to be made in cleaning these things up, isn't there?
There certainly is. You know, that's been the example from Hanford and other places where, some wise decisions early on would have saved us billions of dollars, but that's not always the way it seems that our leaders are taking us.
Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Brett Vandenhoevel with Columbia Riverkeeper. Thanks, Brett.
Thanks, Chris.
Gosh, not using the rivers for sewers, what would we do with them? Fish? Have tourists or something?
There's so much money to be. See, you make a ton of money polluting, in the process of polluting everything, then you make a ton of money cleaning it up.
Dirty money. Oregon's new religious freedom bill mysteriously contains an exemption for schools. While broadening religious freedom in the workplace, it specifically cuts out school districts in Oregon, one of two states that expressly forbid teachers from wearing religious clothing. The exemption drew the ire of some groups, especially Sikhs, whose members wear turbans and other distinctive clothes and have been barred from teaching in Oregon as a result. Do you know what they hide in those turbans, Chris? Do you know what they hide?
Probably
brains. It's very dangerous. They had brains in there. But wait, her teacher's school is the workplace.
And one just final story. With Goldman Sachs paid up on their tarp front and set to award the usual enormous year-end bonuses to the same people who caused the banking crisis, the Obama administration has finally said no. The administration denied emergency aid to the CIT Group, the struggling commercial lender on the brink of bankruptcy. It's a defining moment for the Obama administration's financial rescue program. By withholding aid, the administration is betting that SIT's likely failure won't pose a critical risk to an economy weighed down by rising unemployment. By the way, on the subject of rising unemployment and money, by the way, if you have recently considered applying for food stamps, you might want to think big. The application for billions in TARP funds contains only 10 questions, and it's 2 pages long. So why not go big? Never mind the food stamps when you can get billions of dollars and just fill out 2 pages of paperwork.
Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer this morning is Emily Young. The KBRU Interim AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillium Shannon, in for Kathleen Stevenson, who's on sabbatical. I'm Teresa Mitchell.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Thursday, July 16, 2009. I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.